From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, and welcome to our four-hour special extravaganza on the JFK assassination. Can you believe it? 43 years later. Unbelievable. Here are some of the stories of the day. O.J. Simpson says he participated in the ill-fated If I Did book and interview project for one reason only, personal profit, and he acknowledged that any financial gain was blood money. The book was said to describe how he theoretically would have committed the murders of ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson and her friend Ronald Goldman, had been scheduled for release on November 30th following the airing of a two-part Simpson interview on Fox on Monday and Wednesday. News Corporation canceled the project after a public outcry. In Atlanta, a police official said narcotics officers were justified in returning fire on a 92-year-old woman that they shot to death after she shot them as they tried to serve a warrant at her house. This is a very sad story for both sides. The woman wounded several police officers. One was hit in the arm, another in the thigh, the third in the shoulder. It's very possible when they had a warrant, they went into the house. She, at being 92 years old, didn't know what the heck was going on, and she fired at them. They fired at her. Bad situation. In Dallas, Texas, hundreds of people marked the anniversary of the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy, examining the place from which investigators say the fatal bullet was fired. About 200 people were navigating through the sixth-floor museum in Dallas around midday, examining exhibits and artifacts on the 43rd anniversary of the 35th U.S. president's death. Investigators say Lee Harvey Oswald was at a sixth-floor window of what was then the Texas School Book Depository building when he fired the shots that killed Kennedy and wounded Texas Governor John Connally. But did that happen? Throughout the night, you're going to hear from various guests on Coast to Coast with their own views, their own perspective into what they think they saw, into what they think they knew. In a moment, an interview with Paul Guidry on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Guidry was born in Washington, Kansas, February 22nd, 1919, Washington's birthday. It's also the same day as my father's birthday. After high school and college, Paul graduated from the Williams Institute of Mortuary Science. He enlisted in the United States Army and became a chaplain's assistant and then a surgical technician. After being honorably discharged, he returned to civilian life to build cemeteries, homes, and mortuaries. Paul was the licensed undertaker and funeral director in charge of the burial, subsequent exhumation, and reburial of Lee Harvey Oswald. Paul retired at the age, at that point, of 85 years old. He's our guest now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Paul. How are you, sir?
All right, George. Fine. We're just doing great down here in Texas.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this incredible episode of Lee Harvey Oswald. And tell us, Paul, how did you become, I guess, the licensed undertaker and funeral director in charge of the burial?
George, I was funeral director in charge at a funeral home in the west side of Fort Worth. And the Secret Service called me and said, because of your record in the military, being a surgical technician and running my own aid station in combat, was in the bulge. We looked into your record, Paul, and we found out that you happened to have the qualifications we needed. And the Secret Service agent said, I also then checked one more thing. I called my father, who is a Texas undertaker, and he said, yes, I know Paul Guidry. He knows how to handle it. He can do it. I can't. I'm too far away. But that's why I was picked by the government to do this particular task.
So now your involvement with the body, tell us all about that.
They told me to come to Dallas, get the body of this man that Ruby killed. I did. I brought him to my funeral home. I embalmed him. When we had the word out that we were the funeral home that was handling it, we counted 1,300 news people out back of the funeral home. Just unbelievable that we would have that much attention. And the police were actually spooked by the fact that you get an assassination like this and a president, heaven only knows what's going to happen next. And they really had dog protection on all of the corners, and the police were thick around the place. Knowing good and well that I took care of the burial of Oswald through the funeral home and didn't do anything that I could do other than what was normal for a funeral director to do. Had a family, the mother, the wife, and a brother, and I had to take care of all of this at that time.
Paul, tell us about the wounds to the body of Lee Harvey Oswald.
The fact that this man, Ruby, walked up and fired the shot. Now, I think in my mind that there isn't anybody in the whole country or the whole world that didn't see this action, because it was filmed at the time and run so often and so much. That bullet went between the ribs and went through his body and hit everything possible to cause trouble. Inferior vena cava, his aorta, right around through the inside. Now, I was inside that body. I saw all of this that had happened to him, and it went through. And this is a small caliber gun, and that quick shot. A doctor told me, he said, Paul, if he had been a surgeon, studied it and taken a probe and gone into his body, he couldn't have hit more things than he did with that shot. And it was just one of those things.
I've got a picture, Paul, in my office in Los Angeles that was given to a friend of mine by Ike Pappas, who was with CBS News at the time. Uh-huh. And there's a picture of Ike standing behind Ruby, and clearly you see the picture of Jack Ruby lunging forward, taking that fatal shot at Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah. Now, when you looked at, after the fact, pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald in the newspaper and on television at the time, did it look like the same guy that you were working on, the same guy that you got ready for burial?
Actually, at that time, Secret Service told me that this is who this man was. His mother, his brother, and his wife confirmed the fact. So all I could do was type up his death certificate and said, this is Paul Grudy's embalmed body. It is Lee Harvey Oswald. And I signed that death certificate and it's filed today. I did not really know who the guy was. And after all you can do is take the word of everybody. Now, one of the things, George, that I think is quite unusual that the public doesn't know, but the Secret Service came back to me 3 weeks after I had buried him and said, Paul, did you see scars where he tried to commit suicide when he was in prison in Russia? I said, well, you know, in the first place, we didn't know who he was. Second place, we didn't know he'd been in Russia. And I wasn't looking for scars, therefore I didn't see any scars. They said to me, Paul, we don't know who you buried in that cemetery.
That's amazing. Okay, Paul, when he was put in a vault or a coffin, where was he placed for burial?
He was buried in a cemetery actually east of Fort Worth called Rose Hill Cemetery. And I might tell you, at that time, I had a burial going to happen the next morning of when all this happened, the 23rd. I had to do what I had to do, and that was to find a space in a cemetery to bury him. And I went to a local cemetery because I had a funeral there, and I said to that man that owned the cemetery, can I bury Oswald out here? And he said, oh, yeah, Paul, come on, it's okay. It wasn't long, and he called me back, and he said, you know, I decided not to bury him here. And I said, man, I got to open a grave. I've got this funeral coming up. And I found another cemetery, so I buried him in this cemetery on the other side of Fort Worth, which is toward Dallas.
So at least at this time, Paul, in 1963, was there anything unusual going on with anyone trying to get the body, trying to get involved in what was going on? Or did, at least at that time, did it seem like this is a clear cut? This is, you know, you did what you had to do, and you prepared the body, yeah, and off it was going to go.
That's it. Actually, we didn't have any of this thinking at that time, a conspiracy or anything else other than the fact that we didn't know who he was for sure. And then when the Secret Service said, we don't know who you buried, it all came to our heads. What was going on? Was it something big? And, of course, it turned out to be a different story entirely in the fact that today we have all of these people have written books and done all of this trying to prove what they think is the truth.
Let's move ahead now then, Paul. Around 1980, 81, a British author, a lawyer by the name of Michael Eddowes, who wanted to prove that the JFK assassination was indeed a conspiracy, so he tries to convince Marina Oswald to get her husband's remains, to exhume the remains. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, District Attorney Wade had told Marina in the past that there wasn't a body in that casket, that this was all just fake, and that he wasn't there. That helped Eddowes to convince her that we better take a look so we make sure. Knowing then that we disinter, and since I was chosen by the government to bury him in the first place, they came back and said, now you can dig him up. So I did that very thing. In the process, we found that this vault that I put him in was a steel-reinforced concrete vault, hermetically sealed. They're guaranteed not to break. The vault was broken. The casket was broken. And I could see right then we had a problem. Something had happened. We don't know. But we do know this, that the superintendent of the cemetery, after we buried him in 63, 66, this superintendent happened to be found dead in his bathtub at home. And the pathologist said, oh, this man committed suicide. And I said, why? Doctor, he committed suicide. I knew Johnston. And he said, well, he had 17 stab wounds in the back.
Oh, yeah. Easy way to commit suicide that way, isn't it?
Easy way, you know, I'm not dead yet. I'm not dead yet. Keep stabbing. That didn't happen.
And ironically, Paul, because so many witnesses died under strange and mysterious circumstances following the Kennedy assassination. And, and now here we hear this situation as well. Okay, the vault itself, the fact that you said it was broken, in your opinion, how could it have been broken? I mean, did it look like someone took a hammer to it,
well,
a chisel? What was it?
Well, the fact that I know vaults, I know vaults so well, I was going to buy this vault franchise anyway, and I knew how they build them and all. They are cured for a long time. They weigh 2,700 pounds, so they aren't just a little Mickey Mouse. Knowing good and well that that vault was broken, somebody had to get into it. And what was their principle? My knowledge of this thing was they knew that the Warren Commission would not be right if it turns out that this guy in that casket was not Lee Harvey Oswald. They knew good and well it had to be Oswald. So what would be the distinctive factor now that he was dead and gone and in a grave for 18 years? What would this mean? The teeth would be the way to look at it. Teeth don't change. If the teeth matched Lee Harvey's because he had records when he was in the Marines, then this guy is really Lee Harvey Oswald. So it was always my question, was it really Lee? I don't know. The Secret Service said, we don't know, Paul, who you buried. I didn't know either because it just happened to be the way it was. Also, since it was the fact that this head could have been changed in order to have the head now, Lee Harvey Oswald's head.
So let's go more into this then, Paul. After a lengthy court battle, Oswald's body is exhumed on October 4th of 1981 at the request of his wife, Marina.
Right.
And so you go in, you look at the cracked vault and everything else. Okay, so you open up the casket. What do you see?
Well, I see a body in there, and the head is a skull like you would see in Halloween, a real, honest-to-goodness skull. And I could not see the fact that I had put his head back together. When you're an autopsy case, and I've autopsied, been around them all my life, and you cap it. Now you have the cap, and I had the cap. I put that cap back on and sewed up his head in the back of his head.
Okay.
So it didn't show. And because of that, the string that I used is nylon, and that nylon, I never saw any nylon laying around. It was a changed look to me to see this head in there as that. Now, we took the body to Baylor, and the pathologist said, these are the teeth of Lee Harvey Oswald. But before she did that, she said, we're going to take the head away from the body and put it on the table so we can x-ray it, and it's only going to be clipping procedure. I've been around autopsies all my life. I never could believe that somebody said, I'm going to remove a head on that kind of a body, and it would only be a clipping procedure. Something fishy about the whole thing as far as I was concerned.
And the fact that you said that when you opened it up 18 years later, it looked like, what you would see, a skeleton on Halloween. Is that unusual for 18 years to go by and the skull to be in that kind of condition?
With the vault broken, that it would be very normal. In other words, if a body is put into a grave without any embalming, without anything at all, it doesn't take 18 years, and they're going to be bone, and that's it. I have removed bodies from cemeteries because I built cemeteries. I've removed bodies from old cemeteries to new cemeteries. Always you had that same thing. You never know how long a body would last. And, of course, I over-embalmed Oswald. I found that that body was still not in that bad shape as far as embalming concerned.
How about the clothes that you buried him in and the clothes that you found when you exhumed the body?
Well, they deteriorated because, you see, his vault was broken. Therefore,
yeah.
Water got in, was mm-hmm. not hermetically sealed. I had told the world, because they quoted me in Time and Life and all over, if they don't disturb this body, I've hermetically sealed it. It'll be just exactly like it 100 years from now, exactly like when I put him in there. When the vault's broken, now water's in there, it'll do damage and it's gone. And it was that way when we took him to Baylor.
Now, for the vault to be broken, regardless of how, what would people have to have done to get it to that point? I mean, when you say vault, just let me understand this. It was buried down into the ground, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In other words, the bottom of the vault, George, is a box.
Okay.
Steel reinforced box, hermetically sealed. The lid goes on it, and when the lid goes on, that creates the seal.
Now, okay, almost like one of those old Egyptian sarcophaguses, almost, huh?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And inside of that is a casket with the body in it. And, of course, this is what actually was taking place. Somebody broke in, and I say this, that it was easy enough a short time after the burial to go out and remove that vault. And when they did, they would have taken the lid off of it because the seal doesn't really seal the first week or two
right.
or month. And therefore, that's how come the superintendent happened to say to the fellas that came back and did all this, and he knew it. He was probably going back to him and said, you know, that $100,000 you gave me didn't last too long,
oh
and I'm ready
God.
For a little more.
So in your opinion, Paul, after Oswald or whoever that was buried, somebody or somebodies went back, redug up that area, took out the body. The top of the vault broke, maybe on purpose, maybe when they dropped it back down on the rest of the casket. And off they went with somebody. Do you think that's what happened?
A body, just a head.
Just the head. Stay with us, Paul. All right.
The same body.
Hang on. All right. A different head, the same body. Stay with us. We're going to be back with you in just a moment, Paul. We'll also open up the phone lines this hour as well. And our very special guest this hour is Paul Grudy. He was the mortician handling the body of Lee Harvey Oswald. We're going to talk a little bit more with him about this bizarre situation, and we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM throughout the evening. A number of different guests will come into the program and offer their own perspective. We'll be back with Paul again in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest this hour, Paul Grudy, and we're going to take your calls as well. So, Paul, give me your take on why you think they replaced the head in the vault here. Is it possible then that there were these two Lee Harvey Oswalds and they did the old switcheroo?
There is that possibility, and that man by the name of Armstrong, John Armstrong, has written about it. He's given lectures about it, that sort of thing. He really is the one who came up with all this Lee, Harvey Oswald, and Harvey Oswald, supposed to know each other, and they definitely a conspiracy and that sort of thing. I don't know much about it. My son Don is the one who researches so much of the stuff, and he knows more than I do about that thing. But it's in the computer. There's no doubt about that.
I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead. Finish.
Just the fact that there was one thing we were talking about, the head leaving the body and
yes.
That sort of thing. I knew it was the same body because when I buried him, Marina stood up and leaned down and tried to put his wedding ring back on his finger. He had left it before he left the house.
Right.
And that's recorded. We know that that was the case. When she had her finger with the ring on it, her finger, she pulled off her little ring that she had that was her wedding ring, I guess, little ruby affair, and she tried to put it on Lee Harvey's finger, and it wouldn't go because her little ring was there. So I said, Marina, I'm going to help you, and I took that out into my hand, and I put the ring on Harvey, but I did put her little ring on his pinky, on his little finger. And when I dug him up, that was still there. And I told my wife, Virginia, we've only been married 63 years now. She was with me, and I said, Virginia, go over and tell Marina that the rings are there. She didn't ever know. Marina never did know what had happened to her ring. She thought she lost it. So she was glad to get it back. And that's a part of the saga of what really happened, and the public doesn't know about that.
But you are convinced that the head is different than what was on the body when you buried him the first time?
The head I buried the first time had an autopsy because I put the cap back on it.
Right.
And when I dug him up and took him to Baylor, that head did not have the mark of a skull decap.
Oh, my. Okay.
And therefore, okay. They at the pathologist at Baylor said that this is the head of Lee Harvey, and they took pictures and publicly showed that picture, and it was not the head that I saw. The head that I saw was the one that was a skull. This was a hairy, ugly-looking head that they say. This was Lee Harvey's head, and it had a mark showing that it had been autopsied.
Were dental records of the original head that was buried with the body that was attached, were they taken then, back in 1963, or only were the dental records checked after the exhuming of the body?
After the exhumation.
Possible, then, that the dental records that they all revealed about being Lee Harvey Oswald in 63 belong to this head that they ultimately put into the vault.
That's it. We don't know how all that transpired, and the whole thing is, evidently, they had the real Lee Harvey Oswald dead. Now, my son was with me when we talked to Mrs. Oswald, Margarita, the mother, and she said, my son someday will be exonerated. And she said, she told us she had never really seen that her son after he came back from Russia. Well, if this is the case, who was it? I've been telling folks lately, George, you know, we have a president right now that has a look. You can identify him by looking at him. But Jay Leno has a guy on television all the time that's been groomed to look like that president.
Yes.
With actions and everything. Now, why couldn't somebody do that? A clone, in other words, is what's possible. This guy who was Harvey Oswald, not Lee Harvey, but just Harvey, I don't know the story. All I know one thing. I buried the one that Ruby shot, that's for sure.
Whoever he was.
Whoever he was. And if I never know, it's just fine with me. I did what I had to do, that's for sure.
And that's the one who said he was a patsy. Remember that?
The mother said he was a patsy, that he was a patsy, and that's her son who was the patsy. And where that son ended up getting himself buried sometime after this, because if they changed heads and found the teeth of the real Lee Harvey Oswald, that's why they wanted him in that casket.
Absolutely. So I got to tell you, Paul, this is riveting information that I haven't heard any place else. I mean, you need to put this in some kind of memoir or book form so the public can hear it beyond our show.
My son's been working on that. Memoirs are coming up, and that'll happen, but I've got to find the right kind of a writer.
And I got to tell you, you are, 87 years old now?
I'm only 87, but I'm going for another 87.
Good for you. You sound phenomenal. We're going to take phone calls now from listeners with you, Paul. So
okay.
We'll have them speak up as loudly as they can so you can hear them, okay?
You're great.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Paul Grudy, and just speak up as loudly as you can for him, please.
Yeah, this is Tony in Seattle, Washington.
Sure thing. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, the question is, why wouldn't the government be happy just to leave all of Lee Harvey Oswald buried and just accept that he was the one that shot Kennedy?
My answer to that would be Michael Eddowes, the English author who wrote a book and said this was a clone, this was not Lee Harvey, and others have, in the meantime, have written about the fact that there were two of them. And it was a curious thing, but the only person that had the right and privilege to disinter would be the wife. And the wife was thoroughly convinced that there was no body in that casket. Because old District Attorney Wade at Dallas County said there's no body in that vault, and she knew good and well that I put that body in that casket. She saw it, and she put the rings on his finger. So I'm convinced that it was a matter of getting him disinterred was not an idea for the government, but they sure wanted to make sure that this guy had the right teeth so that the Warren Commission would be correct.
Absolutely. Why did the district attorney say there was no body in the vault?
Well, we aren't too sure. Of course, he's gone now, and we can't quiz him, but there's no doubt about it that if he had word from somebody, and that was why they turned out that way, I'm sure. Somebody told him that was the case, and he relayed that to Marina.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
This is Doug. I'm in St. Louis.
Hi, Doug. Go ahead, sir.
The question I had was when he did the autopsy, being that that was an old military rifle and probably kicked like a mule, were there any bruises on Lee Harvey's shoulder?
I didn't see any bruises on him. Only thing I saw was one thing, and that was the hole where the bullet had gone in, and they saved that hole as the skin itself with the bullet hole. Now, what happened to all of the other things that they kept, I have no idea. What I saw was the perforations in his aorta and that sort of thing. That was all there when I took care of him.
Paul, didn't Lee Harvey Oswald, or whoever he might have been, didn't he have some kind of a operation behind his ear at some point?
That's right. And, of course, at that time, I didn't have any knowledge of this, but I know this, that the man that Michael Eddowes wrote about and said this was a clone, they had actually operated on that man and made a scar so that he would have that scar like Oswald had.
And now, do you remember seeing that scar on the person that you buried?
Not at all, because, of course, at that moment and that time of burial, I did not have any opportunity of knowing that the guy had ever had a mastectomy.
All right, so it's possible, though, that the scar was there, right?
Sure.
Okay, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, hi, George. Hey, Paul. This is Dave in Austin, Texas.
Hi, Dave.
Paul, just a couple quick questions. I watched you many times in The Men Who Killed Kennedy, and I've always been confused about something in there, and I'm confused about the same thing again tonight. Are you saying that when you put Oswald's body in the ground, the head was still connected to the body, and then later it was not connected?
I am not saying that. What I'm saying is that when we took his body to Baylor, the pathologist there said, we're going to remove the head from the body to X-ray it. And that is standard procedure as far as she was concerned. She couldn't get the X-ray machine down in the casket where he was. So they actually took the head away from the body. And the thing was really peculiar. She had permission to do anything necessary to examine his body. And therefore, she didn't have to come out and ask it, but she came out and asked, I want to take the head away from the body so we can x-ray it and put it on the table. My wife was sitting right there. She heard it and saw it. They put that head on the table, and the lady, the pathologist, said, it is only a matter of clipping procedure. God, I've been around these bodies all my life, and that is no clipping procedure to get a head away from a body.
I see. Can I ask one more quick question?
Oh, absolutely.
Just a short one. Were you also saying, this is another thing I've been confused about, are you saying that the head was in a more advanced state of decay than the rest of the body?
I have said it before, and I say it again right now. Yes, definitely.
Ah.
It was a bare-bone skull like you see in Halloween. The one that I buried had hair on it and was a normal-looking body head. But when I got that open, that grave opened, and looked in that casket, that jawbone was hanging down on his chest. It was, his teeth were in it, and the upper teeth, and I tell it because it's the truth. When I was a kid, my dad was an MD. I was going to be a pathologist, and didn't end up that way, but my dad had a skull, and that end of the backbone was still attached to that skull, and as I tell it, the little old kids in the neighborhood got scared to death because we had a bear rug, and I'd hide under that bear rug and stick that head out there, and it just scared the living daylights out of those kids. That backbone is not easy to detect, to break away from the rest of the body. And she said, I'm going to take a head, and it's only going to be a clipping procedure. I can't believe that.
We've got some pictures up on the coasttocoastam.com website, and there's a picture of Paul there at the funeral, kind of leaning over the casket. if you want to go to the coasttocoastam.com website and take a look at that. West of the Rockies, you are on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Jason Alderetti. I'm a Houston police officer.
Oh, hi, Jason. Thanks for calling.
No problem. When, about 9 years ago when I was in the police academy, we had a old seasoned veteran from the Homicide Investigation Division of the Houston Police Department came and give us a talk and let us know what the Homicide Division does. One of the stories he brought out was, he showed us a picture of a murder, and this murder happened probably in the late 60s, early 70s, where a man that lived alone with his elderly parents chopped them to pieces, and he stuffed all the body parts in an old refrigerator, never to be seen again. Well, he showed us a picture of the suspect. The suspect was an exact clone of Lee Harvey Oswald, and the picture was an old Navy picture. He said he was questioned numerous times by the CIA, asking all sorts of questions about this suspect. The suspect, as far as I've known, has never been seen again. And it was his belief, and it always struck me as strange that this was a clone of Lee Harvey Oswald, and he had something to do with it.
That's possible, I'll tell you. Many a story comes out of this whole thing, and I just love every bit of it because I was so involved, and I am a part of it and always will be as long as I'm around.
Paul, so now I've got to ask you, what do you think has gone on here? What do you think has happened? I mean, do you believe there was a conspiracy to kill JFK, or indeed it was a lone gunman? What are your opinions?
Number one, I am convinced that whoever did the shooting was the one who did the shooting. He might have had help because the way you see the film, the president's head flies backward also. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there were bullet holes, they say, in the limousine windshield. Therefore, the hole was in the wrong direction. So we don't know. And one thing for sure, I have always said it when I talk to a crowd or talk to people about it. I only buried Lee Harvey Oswald because that's what I did. I signed his death certificate. I had to do that because I had a family. It was a mother, a brother, and a wife, and two kids that were left behind to suffer whatever it was that went on. And I was the concerned about them always and always have been.
How does it feel, Paul, to truly be a part of history, to be as close to it as you were?
It's kind of eerie. Just the fact that when you're in the funeral business, there are a lot of things go on in that business that are similar in the fact that you don't know what's going on for sure. You have to weed it out in your mind, and you think of the detectives and the police department and the FBI and the Secret Service and everybody involved. They, too, face this all the time, and I just happen to be one of those facing it. And since I've been shot at by the Germans, I didn't get hit, I don't think. But one thing for sure, George, I'm 87 now and live on a lake up here, viewing a beautiful lake, and married a beautiful angel, and we're still together. And because of that, I say, you know, it couldn't be any closer to heaven than living in Austin, Texas.
Good for you. I'm going to be in Austin, Texas in January, Paul.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, since this assassination in 1963, I've always believed that this nation has never been quite the same. Do you feel the same way?
I feel the same way. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I'm so glad that they finally have recognized the fact that the public is still interested. 600,000 people show up every year to Leon Plaza. And because of that, it makes a difference.
Absolutely. Paul, you take care of yourself, my friend, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Thank you so much, George. Come and see us.
I will. And so our JFK conspiracy extravaganza continues in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.